is kind of a sparse crowd, so feel free to ask questions in the middle of this, and really we're going to cover a wide variety of topics here. My name is Bill Marshall, and I've been with IBM for a little over 10 years or so now, and actually I started on a group that was put together. We're both from Rochester, Minnesota in the United States, and we were going around consolidating OS2 servers from, you know, little departmental servers and building large ones, and did quite a bit of OS2 work, migrated into Windows work, and I've been doing a lot of Linux past several years. Just a quick overview of the agenda, and I won't even read through this, but you'll just see it as it comes up. All right, this is kind of a long story. That's why we called it a journey. So starting back in March of 2002, we seriously started looking for a migration option away from OS2. At that point, we had 4 terabytes of data on about 50 servers. We had an OS2 domain with about 6,500 users in the domain. And our client base was running mostly on Windows NT and Windows 2000 software on their desktop. Approximately 4,000 of these Windows clients had joined into our NT domain, and we did minimal client management on there. Basically, we encouraged them to join the domain so that if you forgot your password or if I wanted to check out their event viewer, that sort of information, it's much easier if they're in the domain to just go stick your finger and look at their box. And due to the way that IBM often, we end up using the Microsoft stuff, but we don't try and embrace the Microsoft stuff. So even when it would be easier for users to sign on to a domain, the IBM strategy is to users sign on to their local systems with a local account. So at this point, we knew OS2 was end of life, but we were really waiting for corporate direction of where we wanted to go. The Windows clients had been causing us some problems against OS2 servers for quite a while, and we'd been in kind of a monitor it and fix it mode. And here's my technical. The session setup in X, when you set a VC equals to 0, it was causing us problems against the OS2 servers. We had discussions with OS2 support, Microsoft support, and if you go wading through the Samba code, which I don't do a lot of, you can see specific things in there that VC 0 is just goofy. I think Jeremy's nodding aggressively. So, and then when XP Service Pack 1 came out, this really started breaking more things. I don't remember what, but we were slowly rolling out XP Service Pack 1, and we started seeing more bad things happen on our OS2 servers. So throughout 2002, we experimented with Samba servers for IT use. And as John said in the last talk, you know, you got to spend some time figuring out, you know, getting comfortable with it. I think the easiest thing to do, you take the dog food analogy or eat your own cooking, is basically we took my team and we set up a Samba server, and your home to move to the Samba server. So, you know, just jump in with your feet, jump in over your head, and then you can figure out what's going on. And then once you've got, so your server runs well, then you start picking other people around your IT group and putting them on Samba. Okay, so after playing with Linux for about almost a year, in January 2003, we realized there was 3 main problems to solve. And as I wrote this slide up, I started looking at, you know, how Samba has actually solved these problems, mostly for Windows servers, but we were dealing with OS2 servers. So what we're looking for is, how can we take OS2, make it go away, and not have the end users notice? Because I don't like talking to the end users, because they don't really know what's going on. So if you can just change things and they don't notice, life's much easier. So could we get an operating system transparency? That is, Samba Linux is designed to replace a Windows server, but could we find some set up to make it work like an OS2 server? And then another big thing that's a positive is location transparency. We wanted to take several small servers, server 1, server 2, server 3, and combine them together to get big server 2. And again, we don't want the users to notice anything. And then authentication transparency. So Samba has the feature to do a net vampire out of a Windows domain, but how could we get the data out of the OS2 domain and migrate it through? So really, we needed to deliver a new NT account with the same password, and again, we don't want the users to have to do anything. Yes?
Could you tell us in a few short words what's the difference between OS2 server and the Windows server? For those who...
Okay.
OS2 only from a little bit more far away.
Let's see. OS2... Oh, good. Okay. What's the difference between an OS2 server and a Windows server? nothing yet everything is kind of where you start with. A Windows domain implements centralized users. They only exist on the domain controllers. OS2 domain involves replicating the entire user database to each of the OS2 servers. So each server, it could kind of be a standalone entity, meaning there's no authentication getting passed across the wire. Otherwise, the same basic SIFS or SMB protocol is used, just minor variants upon that. Most of what you learn on an OS2 server, if you used the net command, it was really amazing what moved over to NT. Since, you know, OS2 was a Microsoft and IBM project, and then NT, you know, Microsoft dumped OS2 and went off with NT. In fact, you could even, we had Perl scripts or Rec scripts that used basic APIs over the network, and you could fire the same command to an OS2 server and an NT server and get back the response, the same desired response at some levels. That not too bad? Okay. And then the next big task that anybody will face in a large migration is how do you get the data moved? So we tried many options to move the data from OS2 to Linux. But we really needed an incremental method because we only had a small outage window. So at this point, our servers were up to 280 gigabytes in size. So we tried, the first thing we tried was booting an OPIC CD on the OS2 server, which was really neat. Boom, it came up. It mounted your OS2 HPFS file system. HPFS is high-performance file system. It's closely, not too far off from NTFS. And then we're going to use rsync to move the data across the network. However, we happened to find bugs in the HPFS driver so that certain directories were not seen. We did work to get the HPFS driver fixed, but it was late, too late to meet our needs. Next, we were thinking, well, we can just net use to Samba and from the OS2 server push the data across the network. But the OS2 xcopy just doesn't handle large trees well. We never quite figured out why. But over the years, we learned that if you're trying to move massive amounts of data, OS2 didn't do well on that. And then the other option would be we could take a Windows client and use xcopy to move the data by net using to both OS2 and Samba. But then you're moving the data across the network twice. Performance isn't good. Eventually, we ended up using rsync, which, of course, is another tridgeism. Everybody should know that one. And SMBFS, or SMB mount, as you may know it. So, but then again, we found some problems in SMBFS against OS2 servers. Just weird little bugs in the way if you get a number of direct files back in a directory, and sometimes it doesn't break the numbers up correctly in the right number of packets. So Steve French, who works in the IBM Linux Technology Center, helped us make some code changes to SMBFS, but still we couldn't get a great solution there. So we went to the final hack, which was you'd move the vast majority of the data, and then we'd use a Windows Perl script to do a tree compare and to do the final copy. It wasn't pretty, but it was replicatable, and we felt that we had all the data moved over. And so that just handles moving the data. Now, file ownership and ACLs are still another matter to cover. All right, file server migration. So this is how do we get, looking for location transparency, and these are some kind of random notes that landed on this slide here. One thing we implemented early on was a Samba-hosted distributed file system, Microsoft DFS, and that gave us some location transparency. We have everybody mapping to their home dir, some 6,000 people. They map to RCHFS home user ID, and then DFS provides a link off to the correct server where their home dir lives. And the nice thing is we can move it over a weekend or something, and the user client caches that for about 6 minutes. So the vast majority of time, we can relocate data now, and the user doesn't have to do anything. Back to my key point of don't bug the user. And then we also, what do we call our groups or departmental or project shares, also map through RCHFS. We have RCHFS set up on a, they're not high availability per se. They're front-ended with a load balancing box. But we have two identical systems, and it would be a great HA Linux project. So we've got good redundancy there. We've never had a problem. But you really want to plan when everybody is net using through one single point. You really want to make sure you've got a good high availability story. Our migrations took place during our weekly Friday night outage window. And when we replaced the server was renamed and rebooted, but we kept it online. So for some reason, we did miss a chunk of data down a directory tree. We could just use the old name and copy it over. And then tell the user, well, maybe you should go look closely. I think it's really there. And then once we were comfortable that the data had been migrated, which is probably about a couple weeks later, you know, if nobody's complaining a couple weeks, you're good. So then we'd reload the system with Linux and reuse the hardware the next Friday night. We had this big waterfall process going, whereas, you know, as soon as the server got offline, it would be reloaded with Linux, we put more disk, and then right back into the system. So most of the administrators on my team had minimal Linux skills or very Linux skills, and we came from a Windows background or OS 2 and Windows background. So I created some simple Perl client server.
So what was the hardest thing that they found in moving to our Linux and SAMBA service? What was the thing they had the most difficulty with?
I think ACL mapping throws people for a loop. Also, problem determination. Not that you know that people necessarily were really good at going and looking at a Windows event viewer, but we went through various different scenarios, and sometimes Samba would either trying to think of the options, but it seems like sometimes funny things will go wrong, and I just have to tell them set the log level to 3 and go read the log level to see what really went on. I can't point to a specific Samba-ism. But often, you know, if people connect with the wrong user ID, or we're now moving, most of our web pages you can authenticate to with your whole email address. It's amazing how many people now will try and sign onto their box and then net use with their whole email address. It's like, no user, you want your little short name, not your big name. So we you know, you see a whole variety of silly things going on. And one of the other reasons I created this little script was just for consistency. We'd always had under OS2, rec scripts and automation, so that when you created a share, we set up comments the exact same way, and so consistency.
So would it help if they could use event viewer to map and look at this analog? Would it just make them more comfortable if they could?
Yeah, that definitely wouldn't hurt the people on my team.
Okay, because that's coming.
Okay. Do you know, John, do you know of any other things in particular? No, and we do find, you know, set the log level to 3 is a stab. There's some things that I don't care about at log level 3, and then there's some things that don't show up until you're at level 3 that you... So, you know, I could complain and see a little consistency on error logging. And I was talking to Jerry and Jim last night about really, there's auditing things that I'd like to see. When somebody locks out their password, that we luckily haven't had to do a lot of digging into, but now when somebody locks out their account, I don't really know why they did it. You know, was it a worm that was beaten against your desktop, or were you presenting the wrong password 5 times to this server? So I'd like to see that improved. Okay, let's see. This little client-server thing, it's really simple to do in Perl. We've just got a server listening with no great security on the Linux side, and then a client script that we run on the Windows side. And that now creates shares, change ownership on shares, dumps ACLs. It's my kitchen sink script whenever. Because with 50 servers, at the end of the week, I ended up with PuTTY or SSH sessions to way too many of them. So anything that I do frequently, I'm now adding into this script and just have it go do it for me so I don't have to sign on. And then after we'd done the first server or two, we realized, you know, you start going, okay, this is a repeatable process. The scripting language on OS2 is Rex. There was a great API to get at the server information. So back when I could remember how to do Rex, we wrote some scripts to basically export everything on the OS2 server and then set up various files to run on the Linux side. So we had bash scripts to do the SMB mount, bash scripts to do the rsync that we could just run repeatedly throughout the week. And then at cutover time, we added NetBIOS aliases so that when we're merging several servers together, we set up the aliases in the SMB conf, and then the shares themselves, we put an include file that was included from the SMB conf. So during the week, we'd resync the data. Friday nights, we actually rebooted the Linux box to pick up the new name, and we rebooted the OS2 box to go to its old name, and we did a final sync of the data. Side note, make sure you've got your data mounted before you do the final sync, because when you don't have it mounted and you do the rsync, it's a really syncing No, no pun intended. It's a bad feeling when that 60 gig you really wanted just went to DevNull. And then we moved had the Linux system into production. So actually, at the end of our migrations, we got this down to, it was a repeatable. And I was talking to a coworker on the phone. He went, "This is trivial. Let's just set an at job." I said, "You think so?" He said, "Sure." So we actually, you know, essentially ran the migrations from cron. This is just a simple server migration, we called it. When we first were doing this in 2002, 2003, there was no ACL support, meaning no extended ACLs, no POSIX ACLs in JFS, which is we're using under the eat your own cooking theory. JFS coming from the IBM Linux Technology Center. So that's why we chose that, not for too many other reasons, actually. And so, at this point, we had to use the SMB conf parameters to allow and restrict access. So this is where if you scratch your head, you're like, wow, you can do an amazing amount of things in the SMB conf. And this next thing, we created fake groups so that even if you had a set of users that were allowed to get at a share and they didn't have a specific group set up for them, using the force group and using these masks, that's how everybody was allowed to read and write the shared data. So you can study that when it gets on the web if you're interested. So when we're doing now, how are we doing authentication? Ideally, there would have been a WinBind for OS2. I called a few people up and said, what do you think? So initially, we were building the Etsy password, the Etsy group, from the OS2 information and then rsyncing it out. And we'd set up security equals server. But we realized that security equals server was unreliable in Samba 2.0, but it's okay in Samba 3. Had that pointed out to us yesterday. So then, since security equals server wasn't usable, we moved to security equals user, and we were actually building an SMB password centrally, because it's pretty easy to get the password hashes out of OS2 and then replicating that around. And then at some point in the process, I realized, well, I don't need the OS2 domain controllers, because I just need users, groups, and hashes. So that helped us get farther down the journey. All of our users have been changing the passwords via a web interface, so we added a hook to grab the hash and just shove that to our master. So our home directory servers were migrated and merged first, because generally we just made the assumption that people's ACLs on their home doors were clean, and we found a very few that weren't. We said, tough Linux, deal with it, basically, to get on with the process. And so we used DNS and NetBIOS aliases to combine our servers together. So we've got some servers that are known by 5 different names. Again, you don't want to tell the users you changed anything. You just want to keep going with the old names forever. So late January 2003, we migrated our first server from OS2 to Linux Samba. And throughout the weekend and Monday morning, we were kind of nervous, but nobody noticed. And that's the success story. I've told people, we moved everything from OS2 to Samba. As you know, 6,000 users, and 99% of them didn't have a clue. And some of them only had a clue because I was bragging about what we were doing. Because Linux, you know, has positive karma, or whatever you want to think about it. So then we got on to having to deal with complex ACLs. Some servers just, you know, had directory trees where you had either areas and then this department, and the multiple departments had different ACLs for different directories. So Samba and kernel improvements allowed us to continue. We built our own kernel with JFS and then added in the extended ACLs and extended attributes and upgraded Samba. And then we wrote a command file to export the ACLs from HPFS, and then a Linux Perl script parsed that output and used the setf ACL command on JFS. So pretty much we could replicate ACLs on a tree then. The OS2 ACLs were real simple, read, write, execute, delete, so that maps easily to POSIX, none of this Windows stuff that we have to deal with otherwise. Is this the part you want?
Yep.
Okay. At one point I was running through this page, but John's going to take over now. It was most of 2003. I think we finished up some point in September. And you'll have IBM, we're at a manufacturing site and a development site, so we have to take freezes at the end of each quarter and things like that. So there's a few times we can't work. And then when it got nice out, and when it gets nice out in Minnesota, you, you quit working to go outside, things. So we weren't, there were some weeks we weren't making migrations, but mostly we were moving along at a pretty good rate.
All right, can you hear me all? Okay, so I'm John Janosik. I was in the same department as Bill, and I've worked for IBM for about 7 years now. I started as an AIX admin doing AFS and DFS support. And I had been using Samba as a gateway to... Okay. So I had been using Samba as a gateway to AFS and DFS for a few years and had gained some knowledge of the authentication because I'd modified Samba to store the password hashes out in DC registry attributes, which I assume no one knows about. But so I had some familiarity with the code. So about August 2003, we started looking at, well, we've got this OS2 domain and we've got an NT domain. But really, the OS2 domain isn't doing anything, so let's get rid of it. Because we're already pushing all the hashes out onto all the Samba servers. So we created all the users in NT in just one big group. We didn't worry about migrating the hashes at this time, and I'll talk about that later. So all we had to do was email the users and say, hey, from now on, your password expiration notes are going to say you're in this NT domain, but... and the OS2 domain is gone. Users really didn't have to do any action. So at this point, we had all the users in NT, and we could start looking at using WinBind to eliminate some of our manual rsync process to each server. So first, we did our own server first, put WinBind on it, and it did work well. The only issue we had was there were no password hashes on those NT user accounts yet. So we had to modify Samba so that if we got a bad password, we would fail over to the SMB password file. And we have a six-month password change policy at the time. So over 6 months, people changed their password, and their password was then in NT. There was some issue because during the migration time, if you changed your password, then you could use your old or new, because if you failed against the NT domain, you'd fail back to your old password and SMB password. But that was a temporary issue. And again, as Bill said, everyone was changing their password via the web page because they logged in locally. So we could hook into that and still be pushing out, you know, passwords and updating the SMB password as well as the NT domain. Now looking back, there were some other things we could have done to make the process a little better. If we knew what we knew now, we would have skipped NT altogether and gone right to Samba. Since it was so easy to get the password hashes out of OS2, it would have been very trivial to use a script to build an LDIF file and then just build a brand new Samba domain or migrated our existing NT domain as a small domain and then just LDIFed all our new users in. But of course, at the time, we were still new to Samba domains and we didn't realize this. I had also looked at pushing the Landman hashes from OS2 into the NT security database. I had seen some tools for dumping that, and I found we could write the same thing to push the changes back, but it required going in and changing ACLs because by default, even administrators on a domain controller can't access the SAM in the registry. It's just system. So it kind of scared me to be going in there and changing the registry and this way. So because we had to change passwords every 6 months anyway, we just went ahead. So... now on to, it's almost a year later, and we've been running in the NT domain, but we know NT is going out of support the end of 2004. So we really wanted to get to an all Samba and Linux solution. At the time, Samba 3.04 was current. We wanted to keep the redundancy we had now with multiple NT domain controllers, so we decided LDAP password backend was the only option. And also, we had seen other customers migrating, and we figured any other large customer we're going to help is going to be using an LDAP backend. So right away, there were performance issues with our test setup. We were using the IDLX SMB LDAP tools, And we found adding new users after we'd added the first 2,000 or 3,000 would slow down to almost a second or two for each new user. This was the main cause of Vampire taking so long that eventually NT would just stop responding to our RPCs after 4 or 5 hours. Then we bypassed the migration temporarily just to see how Samba performed as a domain controller, and we found with around the 10,000 users we had at the time, some of the RPCs that our Windbind member servers would make would take over the 10-second timeout on Windbind, so it just didn't work. We did consider moving away from Windbind on our member servers and maybe going to NSS LDAP, but again, we didn't think that's what other customers would want to do, so we wanted to get the issues fixed in Samba. So we postponed our migration till the end of 2004 and decided to keep Windbind on our member servers. So this was, you know, the summer of 2004. I posted the Samba mailing list, and right away, I think it was Andrew Bartlett, showed me how to change the SMB LDAP tools to store the next user ID and group ID right in LDAP. It turned out those tools were iterating through every user to find the next UID. And so when you have a few thousand, it takes a lot of round trips to your LDAP server. So that helped a great deal with reducing the migration time, but it still took a few hours to Vampire, and we were getting intermittent failures. So our solution was to Vampire locally to all the Samba attributes into a TDB, but letting the SMB LDAP users, and also to put the local, you know, let Vampire create local POSIX users and groups. Julia Senarusai and the IBM Linux Technology Center gave us a patch to PDB edit, which is a start, and it would dump your TDB into an LDIF file right with just one PDB edit command. That wasn't accepted at the time, when I think it wasn't complete. We finished it up, and it was a very fast way to migrate. I think, you know, the vampiring to locally with 10,000 users took us about an hour and a half, and then the dump to LDIF would be a 20-minute process. We were worried that some customers might already have their users in LDAP if they had another directory, so we wanted to find another solution besides doing that. And also, we weren't sure if it was going to be accepted into Samba at some point. So what we did was Vampire to the Samba attributes to a TDB, but let the SMB LDAP tools create the users in POSIX. This would take about 2 hours. But then we could just remove the TDB and do this again during our outage window. And since the POSIX users were already in place, the process would take around an hour or an hour and a half. Performance improvements were also needed in the Samba domain controller. I know Gunter already talked about this quite a bit yesterday. And it turned out we were doing some of the same effort, and I was actually testing some of their patches and didn't realize it toward the end. So the two places that affected us were when Windbind would query the domain sequence number to check the validity of its cache, it was iterating the number of users and groups because that RPC also returned that information. So pretty much Windbind would never get running on our member servers because that RPC would never complete in the timeout. The second issue we had was when Windbind would query the members of a group, it was iterating through every user and comparing its primary group ID to the group being looked up, and that also would never complete. So we could never get any group to show up on our member servers. When I analyzed the logs, the biggest thing I saw was that it was taking 50 seconds just to get the LDAP search result from our LDAP server. It turned out that when you do a synchronous LDAP search with the open LDAP libraries, you only get one response per packet. So we were getting each user object returned in one packet, and that was just too many round trips. An IBM researcher who was in the IBM LTC, was Jung-Huk Choi, provided us a patch to improve the open LDAP synchronous search performance. And that, in a test domain with 20,000 users, that brought us down to about 50 seconds to 3 seconds. That change was put in LDAP 2.2.24, but they pulled it because it was having a seg fault issue. So it's out of 2.2.25 now, but it should be back in soon. We haven't seen the issue, and our server's been running with that patch for quite a while. But even with these open LDAP improvements, WinBind was still timing out, so we needed more. By this time, I think it was probably October, November of 2004, we had been involved in some other projects again. We don't always work full-time on these things because, again, I still was an AIX administrator. But as a quick hack, I just disabled WinBind from querying the domain sequence number because the Samba domain controller was just returning the current time. So it wasn't, you know, at the WinBind, after WinBind's cache had timed out, it was always refreshing anyway. I also created a WinBind timeout SMB.conf parameter temporarily again so that we could increase the timeout. And along with this, then, we would set the WinBind cache time to a full day, and then we'd have a cron job that would populate the cache. Yes?
Is that still an issue, that
first
thing, still recurring current time?
No. Oh, it is still recurring the current time. Yeah, there's a comment from you that I think that it needs fixed, or maybe it was Jerry. Someone already commented in there, but I'll go ahead and open a bug.
Yeah, it needs fixing, or it is fixed,
sorry. No, there's a comment in the code that says it needs fixing.
Okay.
And it's been there for quite a while.
If you open a bug against it and put it as a fairly high priority, right now, the Samba 3 developers are living out of Bugzilla.
Okay.
If we don't see it in Bugzilla, we will commonly miss it.
Okay. So what we did... You know, so back to the, we set the WinBind cache time to 1 day because, you know, WinBind right now blocks, as though this will be fixed, I guess, in the next release of WinBind. So we would set the WinBind cache to 1 day, and then off shift, we decided we would have a cron job that would get all users in groups via getent calls. And this way, we do have the issue of during the day, then you can't add, you know, if you've got a user that you need to add, you might not show up, but that we decided that was okay. And then the next thing we did was similar to, it was kind of redundant work on what the Samba team was doing, but they weren't quite ready yet. We added a new password backend function that when getting the primary members of a group would just go out and do an LDAP search directly for them. So it's the same thing as the LDAP SAM trusted code. And so now it was the end of the year and we were ready to go, but we had a corporate change freeze for the last whole month. And so we said, okay, we'll delay again. But then, so in February of 2005, we still hadn't gotten our act together and migrated, but there was a security vulnerability in NT that came out, and it was known that there was an exploit out in the wild. So we had the choice of get off NT. There were some groups in IBM who were going to pay for NT extended support, but we really didn't want to join them and delay anymore. And we didn't want to get exploited because we figured if we ran for a few more weeks, it would be too late and we'd be exploited. So at the time of this vulnerability, we were running Samba 3.0.11, a release candidate, and this is the first of the LDAP SAM trusted changes were in this release. So I had to change some of my code to extend that. They still hadn't fixed the primary group issue in that version, so we still had part of our patch. And we're running Open LDAP 2.2.20 with the patch for LDAP I mentioned earlier. Our file servers were running 3.0.10, and with the two patches I mentioned earlier that to extend the client timeout and also to disable that WinBind query domain info RPC. It turns out that Gunter had fixed, he'd changed the query domain info RPC to a new level in 3.0.11, but we just didn't have time to roll out 3.0.11 on all our member servers in time because of the vulnerability, so we went ahead. So, the migration process, again, as I said, we ran initial Vampire during the Friday after that vulnerability. It took about 2 hours, and all the users then and groups were created. We shut down the NT BDCs. Then we moved the PDC and our Samba domain controllers onto an isolated network. We didn't want users changing attributes during the hour that we were doing the Vampire, because we were afraid, you know, you never know when a machine might have to update its machine account password, and then we'd have some machines falling out of the domain. So we just put it on an isolated network and then ran the Vampire to TDB again. After that was done, we ran the PDB edit to put the attributes in LDAP. We powered back the Samba domain controllers up on the production network. Also, after you do a migration, if you have trusts, Vampire does not migrate the passwords for the trusts. And so you have to reestablish them. And after we did that, we just crossed our fingers and hoped everything would work. It did turn out we did find some bugs that night that we had to call Jim McDonough about, I think it was 1 a.m. his time, wake him up. It turned out our...
No, I was still waiting for
it turned out that the way Samba was, I think it was returning RID lookups from our Win2K domain caused the Win2K servers to crash. Because they were expecting more results than we were, than Samba was returning, I believe, was the bug. But then Jim gave us a fix right away, I believe, or within a day. Yeah. So what did we learn from all this? Samba is very flexible. We just in configuring Samba for different security methods and how to implement ACLs, we went through 6 different configs we rolled out.
There's one more coming. Sorry. There's one more option. Because a lot of people found it useful to have a file inherit the ownership from the containing directory. So that's something you can do with groups right now on Unix, but not with the owner. So that will be in the next stable release. Will be the ability to inherit a directory owner into a file.
Okay, so and also during this time, we got to know the IBM developers and the Linux Technology Center, who also are members of like the Open LDAP team and the Samba team, and they referred us to other experiences. So we're also involved in migrating a school district in the U.S. that has 3 NT domains with a total of 50,000 users, and so we've got a lot of the same experiences there. And we're also working with a school district in the U.K. that actually Jim's going to talk about next, that want to roll out 1 domain for every school, so they'll have 300 to 400 of those. We run Samba not only on Intel Linux boxes, but iSeries Linux and AIX. And we've been very pleased with the Samba support of Microsoft DFS. And so we think, it doesn't look like a lot of people are using it, but I think it's a really good thing to set up. If you can set up a highly available solution, I mean, even if you have to keep the links in sync yourself somehow because you can't afford a shared disk on the back end. Sorry, I was getting into some IBM speak there. It's still a good idea, we think, because it reduces questions from customers quite a bit if we don't have to tell them what we're doing. And any questions, our email addresses are up there if people have questions later or... Within IBM?
Yeah.
I don't think I'm allowed to speak on that.
No, he's not allowed to speak on that.
Are there other questions?
Maybe Tom is allowed to speak on that.
Well, we'll see. You can ask me. If I had gone to the toilet or spoken about that while I had this micro when I went out, maybe you could have get the answer. You should have asked before that.
Do you have some special settings for the LDAP server, for the performance? Database backend, for instance.
Yeah, we're running a BDB backend.
Yes, but are there special settings to improve the performance or...
We played around with the cache settings, yes, both within the Berkeley DB configuration. We had to increase it quite a bit. We have about, I think we have 2 gig of memory on our domain controllers, and we had to increase it so the whole database was in memory all the time, or it did not perform well unless the whole database is in memory. So.
So what's your current number one user pain? What are people complaining about the most?
It's locked out accounts, I believe. And it's not Samba's fault. It's that we have worms going around and locking people's accounts out. But that's what Bill was mentioning earlier. It would be nice if we could get some kind of automated...
Yeah, actually, the users are quite happy. You know, we don't get any complaints out of them except for the fact that we have a 5 bad password attempt, which is real easy. You know, if you've got 5 mapped network drives, bam, you're gone. security is unflexible. That's life. My biggest complaint is people keep using more disk space, and we're spending a lot of time moving. You know, this brand new 880 gig server just filled up, so we're spending manual admin time moving people around. So I'm always thinking in the back of my head, well, should we go to Fibre Channel, DASD, disk, anything to reduce the management time we spend. But again, we rsync the data around. You update the DFS link. It's pretty simple. It's about 50-some servers again, 9 terabytes used, and I think we have about 13.5 terabytes spinning.
Okay, I think we have to finish this session. Thanks a lot for a very enlightening talk. Our next speaker is the guy who fixed problems at 1 o'clock a.m. Jim McDonough, I think you're still at the LTC, is that right?
Yes.
Linux Technology Center. And you will speak about Linux-based server appliance deployment in an educational setting.